This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably. What's up, Hot Breathiverse? Welcome back to the Hot Breath Podcast. This is your weekly guide to comedy mastery. I'm your host, comedian Joel Byers, and this quick intro is all just to welcome you new listeners to the show. All you loyal Hot Brethren who have been down since day one, thank you so much. And I know this past week we picked up a lot of new listeners. So thank you however you found us, whether it's through Facebook or Reddit or word of mouth. If you enjoy this show, tell other comics about it. This entire podcast is for comics by comics. And this episode is in that same line of vision where I'm sitting down with the director of my comedy special to break down all the things we wish we knew before we jumped into a comedy special. So we broke this up into two parts. The episode went a little longer than expected. So those of you, I posted on Facebook asking questions about the comedy special. We're going to talk about those in part two. Part one is all about just my personal experience with the special, my vision for the special, and the experience I had with my director, and just what we learned in hopes of inspiring you to get out there this year and start creating your own success. So if that rings a bell with you, share that with other comics. Let's all get better together. And there's nothing else to do besides, you know, if you enjoy this, go pick up the special. It's linked in the show notes. But other than that, there's only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath with Isaac Stackhouse.
Welcome back to the Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. This is an exciting one. This one has been meaning to happen, and the timing is just now perfect. What you're going to experience today are comedian and director sharing their experience producing a comedy special independently.
I had no idea what I was getting into.
Yeah, nobody did. Nobody did.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting is just how organic it all happened as well. I mean, like, you would listen to Hot Breath. I got invited to come onto your podcast, and I'm talking about wanting to record an album.
Right.
And then after our interview on your podcast, The Daily Stack,
right,
you're like, yo, I have a production company. We could just make it a special.
Yeah. I was in the process of, like, going through the thought that I wanted to start my, like, journey into making films of some sort. And I had always grown up, I was telling you before we started recording, that, like, I'd grown up a fan of comedy and comedy albums and watching, you know, like, I watched Red Skelton with my dad. Old school stuff. And so, like, that just kind of was one of those moments where we were mid-conversation in the podcast, and I was like, oh, this is a perfect fit for what I want to try to do. And as you know, a lot of people know about me is that I take things to 11.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to take things way too far. And so I, that's where I was like, oh yeah, sure. I know exactly how to do all this.
Right.
And so we just went straight head first into it. I was pretty excited. You've been doing this for what? 10 years?
10 years. Yeah. I released the special on my 10-year comedy anniversary. So we recorded it, was it November?
Everything's September? A blur. It was
yeah,
November.
Everything is definitely a blur.
It's a blur. Like,
yeah.
Christmas was like 3 days for me. Like,
yeah.
I have no idea what day it is right now. Like, it's Groundhog Day for me.
Yeah, so this will come out pretty much like 3 days after the special is released. So you guys can go pick it up in the link in the show notes or on joelbyerscomedy.com. But really the whole mission was do everything independently and inspire other comedians to do the same.
Well, and it's something that, like, I by trade and, like, the way that I've been able to pay for everything that I've been doing is I have a marketing and advertising company. And the thing that I've been pushing a lot of things towards my clients is that, you're capable of being your own production company at this point in time. Like, mm-hmm. it's like what you're doing here, this whole process. You have the capability to be your own show. And, you know, brands have that same capability. Now, you know, marketers, I can't, you know, stand the fact that, like, marketers are going to ruin that. Like, the platforms will get, because the brands are going to go in and it's going to shift to something else.
Oh, like pay-to-play type?
Yeah, like, I don't really know exactly where it's going to go, because if I did, you know, I'd be a billionaire, and me and Bezos be hanging out. And,
right.
You know, things would be peachy. But yeah, like, it headed towards a way to kind of, the way that I've been thinking, to get off on a wormhole for a second, is the way that platforms are going, mm-hmm. is that there's got to be a way to, like, vet some of the material so that you know that what you're getting is quality, I guess is a good way to put it. Because, like, there's so much stuff. But then it gets weird, because part of what I love about the internet and about what I love about, like, you know, YouTube is, like, mm-hmm. YouTube wormholes.
Mm-hmm.
Completely unrelated videos, completely, but now that's being controlled by computers and
algorithms and all that,
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can get as tinfoily hat as you want on that.
Oh, like, and tinfoily hat?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We don't want to.
I'll start. I'll get over here, you know. I'll have you microwaving your phone by the end of the episode.
I mean, the big goal with me wanting to do a special was really, like, just seeing everyone else, like, creating their own content. You're seeing a lot of comics with specials, but those are like Netflix specials, right. And HBO specials, and they're like in this big theater and they recorded it four times and pieced it together, and like,
yeah, that's what makes it weird too, is like it's polished, and it's almost like part of what I loved about comedy was a lot of the things that get said in a comedy setting is kind of off in the shadows, and it's kind of a conversation that you can have in a free environment. Whereas, like, when you make it polished, which there's a place for that, like, there's the, you know, the greats, there's the Eddie Murphys, there's the, like, really well-polished cut, like, fast-paced, like, there is that style. But I think there's a lot of comedians that get left behind in a way that they'll kill. They're hilarious, mm-hmm. in a room or a setting where they're not being filmed, or there's not that pressure. And that's really in the filmmaking aspect of things that I want to do, is I want to create a world when I'm making films that people aren't aware that the camera is on. And it's more not to trick them into doing something, but to capture what people are doing for real.
Yeah, and that was our big goal with this,
right.
Is to film it in a way that is, well, it's still... And the feedback I've gotten already is, like, it looks incredible.
Yeah,
like, they're like, oh, this is a special. Like, you shot it professionally.
Right,
it's like, yes,
right.
But to have that raw, organic, authentic feel.
Front pocket. Like, you're kind of in somebody's pocket,
right.
viewing the fly on the wall aspect.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what appeals, especially to the people that are in the, like, podcast world. Like, a lot of what appeals to podcasters or people that listen to podcasts is that you're kind of like perched on a wall listening. You're not participating actively necessarily. Some podcasts do a good job of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost an active conversation between, like in the comedian world, Bill Burr, it does a great job of it's literally like your buddy's coming in and just pacing back and forth in your living room.
Right.
Going, you know what really bothers me? Like,
right.
You know, and I got a best friend that I literally compare him to Bill Burr. Like, it's like, and that is an aspect that I think is coming out in the way that things are accessible now. Like, you mm-hmm. talked about people talking about how great it looks. We did that on cameras that we were able to, you know, through my marketing company, we were able to get a hold of some mm-hmm. pretty high-end cameras.
Yeah.
But they're not what it used to be 20 years ago, where you had to spend $20,000
exactly
just on the equipment.
Yeah.
Like, we were able to get by on stuff that would be considered consumer grade. And I've learned a lot of lessons since then.
Oh, we both
on
have,
like,
yeah.
What to have and what not to have. Like, I have a different direction I'm going camera-wise this year, because at the time we were recording, they were, like, everyone in the film industry and everyone kind of in general sometimes now are, like, hammering away at, like, 4K, 4K, 9K, 9K, like, as high as quality. That's great and all, but for one, I've discovered that people can't tell the difference. between 4K and 1080. They're just like, eh, it looks a little bit shinier. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay. And so, like, the amount of headache that it gives you, and, like, a side note, I don't know if any of your questions, that like, the editing on 4K, I learned so many lessons, and I wanted to just destroy, like, cut in the... Have you... You remember the Office Space episode, or Office Space
the movie yeah.
where... The where they take the copier,
right? And
that,
right,
bro,
right.
That was playing on repeat in background while I was working on stuff of just like the damn, it feels good to be a gangster, right. And then the other whatever the song is playing, they're just stomping,
just beating up the.
I wanted to do that to my computer so many times, and it was a Mac, and but I was what it was I was demanding so much out of that
4K
computer.
Is just so much bigger.
It's huge.
Yeah,
it is huge.
And for the return, I don't. I mean, we did 4K because we were like, yeah, that's it. It's industry.
Well, and we were also thinking, you know, which still it's shot in a raw form that we could, you know, I think we could get it on Netflix if they were interested in purchasing it.
Oh, that's
it.
Why. Like, yeah, that's why we shot like
but
that.
But like
yeah.
we shot it going, oh, industry standard. We want to make it 4K. We want to make it to where it could go on Netflix. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then like when we started thinking about it, and we still have more to learn in that distribution aspect, mm-hmm. but like I think that there was a lot more, and to like go full circle on what I was talking about is that like I think that this year I'm definitely going to focus more on the content and the ease of capturing the content versus the quality of the picture. So mm-hmm. like not necessarily 4K, to whereas if I could get like a pro grade camcorder that is 5 years old, that still shoots 1080, still shoots crisps, but does way better job at holding autofocus or, you know, different things that would help me as a filmmaker, I would err more towards that mm-hmm. versus us, like, harping on 4K, 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 unless we're sitting at the table with Netflix and they're saying,
already.
We want this many episodes, we want this type of season.
Makes sense.
Like, that way, they specifically are telling us, this is what we want.
Mm-hmm.
To where you're not, like, chasing your tail because it changes and the technology changes and the things like that. And that's one of the big things I learned in this was don't get ahead of yourself on quality. Like, definitely pay attention and get the highest quality you can for your money.
Yeah.
But, like, it don't live and die on that hill.
Yeah, make the content the quality right. aspect. Yeah.
Right.
And we did both for this one, but I'm glad we did in terms of, like, we want the content to be great, but also the quality, so we learned that many more lessons through the process.
And I'll admit that, like, those Sonys that we were shooting through the weekend that I got to spend with them, I mean, like, the picture that comes just raw through that camera is sexy. It is. I mean, it is a very, like, you're sitting there looking at it, and you're like, I would post this straight to anything, just straight out of the camera. Whereas, like, you know, I'll be shooting on, like, I'm not going to throw any brands under the bus, but, you know, I'll be shooting on, like, an older camera, and you're just looking at it going, oof, mm-hmm. hope I can save this. Hope the white balance holds. It
right.
looks all right. But, you know, like I said before we were recording, I'm not really a gearhead because I'm terrible at details when it comes to, like, this. So I take expert advice on that where I can.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I'm like... So I go in and I tell these guys, you know, this is what I'm shooting, this many cameras, this long, what should I use? And they go, this will probably do you the best. Okay, I like that one, I didn't like that one. And so that's why I like the rental setup mm-hmm. of like renting. Type.
And we learned, yeah, if you don't know, just Google it.
Yeah.
I mean, before this, like a few minutes before the special, wasn't there like an issue with a camera you were having to like Google how to?
Oh yeah, that was shout out to my wife who saved my hiney during that time period. She caught some wonderful B footage for me because the camera that I was shooting on the first there's like two the way that these were set up is there's like two card slots and the first card slot for the SD card just failed, just outright, just didn't recognize there was a card there. So, like, I had to Google a way to go in and reprogram it. Like, I was on Reddit, like, 30 minutes
on
before.
Reddit.
Yeah, like, 30 minutes before. I'll have to go back.
Oh, my gosh.
And maybe before you post this, I can find it so that you can put it, their name in the show notes. But I can't remember the name of the person that I found on the, like, Reddit thread that I was like, oh, this is the exact problem I'm having. I can, like, go through the settings and bypass one of them and make it work. And then I ended up making that one work. And then the camera that I had, that was the one that was, like, camera three, so, like, off to the left.
Uh-huh.
Then the camera I had was started overheating about 15 minutes into your set. And so, like, it would just, like, turn off. And so, like, I'm like... I don't know what I'm going to do with this. Like, and so I sit there and I pop the battery open, the battery compartment open, and I remembered that it was a Sony. And so it's supposed to be able to run with the straight adapter to the, like, straight AC power. But because these were the brand new A7 III's, they had that connection for the A7 II, so we were having to run off batteries.
Oh.
And so they didn't have the, like, connector to the walls, but the battery was supposed to be able to last long enough. So what I did was I would take the battery out, and because they were that setup, they can run with the door open. So I would open the door, and I would swap. I had two batteries in my pocket, and I would swap the batteries, and I would sit there with, like, the cameras cupped in my hand, and I'm, like, blowing. I'm like...
While recording.
So, like,
oh my,
if there's any, if you noticed in any of the, like, raw footage when we were editing, I had to edit a little bit where it looked like your right hand cameraman, the handheld cameraman, was getting mugged occasionally because I was, like, having to, like, swap batteries and, like, hold him up. And the whole time I'm looking over my shoulder at your friend Stephen Fine that did the wonderful job on the three quarter shot,
yeah.
And then my wife was in the back shooting the long shot. I kept looking over my shoulder, looking at them, and, like, they didn't look panicked, so I assumed their cameras were working the way that they were supposed to. And I was just, for the entire special, basically freaking out that, like, I was like, we didn't get any of that. We're gonna, because we had had the moment with the camera, the small camera that was the audience camera that didn't get set up.
Yep.
So I was like, we just blew this whole thing. And it's all just not going the way that I planned. And then, like, I got into the edit, and I was able to calm some of my
fears.
And
it all worked out. But that is, that raw aspect of it, though, is the unexpected.
Right.
Me walking out the first time, and that camera's not set up. And we're like, oh, well, hold on, let's reset. We leave it all in the special, too, which I forget my jokes at one point. We leave it in the special. Like, our goal was... First off, I don't want people to listen to this and think it's not funny or good. This is 10 years of me working at comedy. It's all funny.
I genuinely, like, laughed every time I edited went through the edit. Like, every time I put it together, each punchline that was, like, you know, funny, especially the ones that got left in that were the ones that I'd watched you work on the whole time. Like, there's still ones that make me chuckle. I mean, there's still... Like, after watching it, you know, 100-some-odd times, like, I still chuckle at some of those. And so, like, I think that that's an accomplishment in of itself.
I agree. Yeah, I appreciate that.
And
man,
everyone I've showed it to has audibly laughed.
Okay, good.
At some point or another, you connected with every single person that I've put. I put it in front of so many demographics in my, like, little circle that are like, yeah, that's hilarious.
Awesome.
So, like... That's a shameless plug for you.
You can cut
that little
it's
part out.
It's funny, yeah.
Slap that up on the Instagram.
That's going to be the tagline. Joel Byers comedy special. It's funny.
It's funny.
I bet they would be interested to know, yeah, the exact setup. So what cameras did we end up using?
Okay, the cameras, if I remember exactly correct, they were the Sony A7 III's that had just come out. And they're the mirrorless DSLRs that Sony has. I don't remember the lens now that I think about it. It was one of the variant lenses that are... I think it was a Sony lens that was maybe 50 to 30, I think. So,
okay.
Like 50 millimeter to 30 millimeter, I think it was what it was. And then when we shot all the behind the scenes stuff, that was shot on the little cool DJI Osmo Pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a little handheld gimbal. And then we shot on a Canon Rebel, and then we shot on a Canon 7D.
Cool. And that that DJI camera we used for the vlog, and also that was like our audience shot.
That was the audience shot.
Yeah. And your ideas evolved through your comedy special too. Like at first we were like, maybe we'll have a GoPro up top, and they were like, oh, right. The DJI would look cool like at audience level instead of like being perched up and like trying to. Pretty much we created a diamond in, so the venue holds right. about, the venue, the Basement Theater was actually the first place that ever headlined me. So I wanted to shoot it there because I thought it'd be a cool piece of the story. And it held, was it 60 people? I mean, we like max capacity did.
Yeah, you were I think we only took one person out. I think it was, I think it was 50, I think it was 60 people, but we ended up with 56 seats. Total
okay
is what it was, but like honestly the way that it filmed it really felt like a much larger venue to me in the edit. I thought it was gonna feel claustrophobic in the edit, and it didn't.
Yeah,
but I think that had to do with the crop shot that we shot, as opposed to being all the way out.
Mm-hmm.
We brought it in with those lights being the thing.
Yeah,
so
the
that
border.
Was the kind of like filmmaker kind of decision to kind of frame you.
Yeah, we had like a diamond where on the stage there was that DJI camera to, I guess, to my left, if I'm looking out the audience, to my left is you with a handheld camera.
Right, that was the handheld that we were just running on the Sony.
Right, and then straight back, middle back of the room, your wife is on another.
On the full shot.
On the full wide shot.
Right.
On the sticks. I learned the term the sticks. On the sticks.
That's so tripod. Technical. The sticks.
So she had, the Sony. Everyone was using Sonys, the A7IIIs.
Right,
and then my friend Stephen Fine, a director out in LA, flew in to be a camera operator
right.
on this special, and he was holding a three-quarter shot.
Three-quarter shot.
To the right of me.
On another set of sticks.
To
get technical there.
Yeah.
Speaking of technical, and to plug him real quick, I watched his movie.
Yeah.
Love Shot,
yeah.
Bro, that was a good movie.
It's on Netflix.
That was an incredible movie.
Yeah, Netflix, Amazon, all that.
The people need to check that out.
He's legit.
For the culture.
Yeah, he's legit.
Yeah.
He's my Larry David. Yeah, we're going to do big things.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So when we were recording this, the behind the scenes thing,
mm-hmm.
when we came up with that, like I had that thought process, but was that something you had thought about doing before?
Yeah, I wanted to document as much of it as possible.
Right.
What's great about that idea, though, is it evolved into us documenting a specific joke.
Yeah, that's where that really got deep into like watching. And I didn't really realize it until I saw the whole thing develop out.
Yeah.
Was that at the end, like, you could really pick the jokes that you were like, wow, these are the ones that, these are his pillars. Like, you can see how you constructed it and how you built it and how it was really, like, interesting to watch. Because, I don't know, I mean, like, it was kind of fascinating to watch when you wrote it and then to hear the difference between, you know, I don't know if you want any spoilers.
That's fine.
But the first time you wrote it, like when you wrote it out and you heard, okay, you've really thought about these words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of like showing, kind of like with my podcast, how I was like, I just wanted to create a podcast that I wanted to listen to.
Right.
The same thing with this special is like, I want to do a special that I wish existed, which is like a great, funny comedy special that's well done, but then also, like, how was this special made? How did these jokes develop? So, the behind-the-scenes vlog, I thought of the word vlogumentary last night. What do you think of that?
I like that.
A vlogumentary?
Have they not used that before?
I didn't Google it. I just thought of it. I didn't Google it. I didn't check.
It's okay. They're reading your thoughts. It's already been there. They're reading it.
Vlogumentary. But it to really show, like, just... Okay, how does a comedian take a joke for the first time, and then how does he get it ready for a comedy special? And we really did a good, I mean, in my opinion, I think we did a great job documenting the evolution of a joke.
I think the only thing that I didn't get was I wasn't, like, hovering above you and your wife one night when you, like, woke up and were like, I've got it! Like, I you know, I've always wanted to be there for the Apple moment, for the Isaac Newton, like, thunk, aha, right, gravity. Right. Like, yeah. Like, I want to be there for the Apple and gravity moment. Like, and I'm sure there's an actual term for that.
But I think it's true that, like you said, I didn't know what it was until we got it all together.
Yeah.
And I think that's important for anyone listening is to, like, you don't need to have all the answers up front. Like, just have an idea and just start it.
That's kind of how I live my life.
Uh-huh.
Like, I got one of the, my wife was laughing at me the other day because she had allowed me to listen to Joe Rogan while we were driving on a road trip. And they were making fun of, I can't remember who was on, but they were making, it was him and a chick. And I think it was a girl that was a comedian mm-hmm. that was on there recently. And they were making fun of people that buy ironic t-shirts. My family gives me ironic t-shirts. Like, I was one of those kids in high school that I had the t-shirt that said, it's okay, or I live in my own little world and it's okay, they know me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was that guy. So I've got a t-shirt that I got for this Christmas that says, that sounds like a terrible idea. What time?
Okay.
That's kind of how I operate.
Are you saying my special was a terrible
idea? No. That's not what I'm saying at all. That was completely misinterpreted. No.
No, I was just kidding. I'm a comedian. It was a joke.
Ha ha. Yeah. They're jokes.
Yeah.
They're jokes. But the behind the scenes thing, like mm-hmm. watching what you thought was dying on stage, and there was genuine laughter still during that. I found that interesting, like watching you walk out to the car and be like, I quit.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, and that's not enough people show that range. And that's why you get these, you know, not to slide off onto a serious subject, but like you get these comedians and actors and people that end up feeling alienated and feeling like they're alone in these things because, you know, a lot of doing cool things is failure.
Yeah.
And like documenting that failure is something that I haven't really seen until you see the, you know, expose on, you know, 60 Minutes. And it's
almost,
you know,
like after the fact.
After Pryor's run down the street with his hair on fire.
There's no during. Like, there hasn't really been a documentation of like in the middle of it.
In the thick of it. Just like keep the camera rolling, keep seeing the good, the bad, the ugly, like how it feels. And I would like to see, you know, from my aspect, I would like to do more like this, do more of mm-hmm. these, and almost go in a direction that, like, you don't know I'm filming a special. Like, you and I have an agreement where, like, you're filming a special, but, like, I might film it on a Tuesday night, I might film it on a Thursday night, but I'm there all the time with the camera, and, you know, that's how you capture that mm-hmm. magic, and you capture that. You know, there's guys out there that are kind of doing this already, you know, there's guys that are doing this kind of capturing the magic of comedy that, like, is what attracts people to it in the first place.
Yeah, Andrew Schultz is killing it right
now. That's exactly who
his
I was thinking
system.
About. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's
Did you guys see
it.
Him this weekend? He was in town, I found out.
I was out of town all weekend. I was in Columbia.
I was filming it at an MMA event, and my friend of mine went to the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, hey, did you know Andrew Schultz was in town this weekend? I was like, no, I did not.
Yeah, I was booked in Columbia all weekend. Or I would have, I definitely would have pulled up.
The road world was interesting to me. That's something mm-hmm. I had never seen before. Like, was it something that you dove straight into?
No, I mean, getting out on the road took a lot of time. I mean, I really honestly didn't start getting consistent road work until probably 9 years in terms of, because you followed me around to like two road gigs in a row, like 2 weeks in a row. Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of work didn't come until probably 9 years in. Up to that point, it had been like, oh, let me drive 12 hours for $50 on this Wednesday night, or
but is that just for stage time? Like, so for people that are trying to like make their way in, I mean, are you doing that for stage time?
Yeah, and the experience of just performing,
just the around experience, who you might meet there,
exactly
that type of
That just that 12 hour drive, just that example, I went up with Ronnie Jordan, who then on that trip, I came up with the idea for Hot Breath. So it all worked out. And it was with, I mean, Ronnie Jordan's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. So just to get to ride with him just that long, I knew I would learn something. So it's all, the road work mainly came from like a friend being like, hey, I have this gig. Do you want to do it for, you know, not much money, but you'll get to perform outside of your city.
Right.
But the road doesn't have to be 12 hours. It could be 2 hours to the next town over, you know, I mean, and that's considered the road, you know, it's all, I encourage all comedians to get outside of their scene as much as possible, just so they don't get in their comfort zone and they just, it keeps it exciting and new.
Yeah, I think that that was something that interesting that I noticed during the time that I was hanging out with you and, like, filming you was that, like, you didn't want to lean on, and that's something that I noticed in the comedy community was, like, you didn't want to lean on what was your old material or what you had been doing. Like, you wanted to do something that was new and something that was what was interesting was I was watching you. I think you came up with the concept of the, like, overall joke from the trophy husband stuff, like, as we met. Like, I think that you were developing that thought process, and so, like, you genuinely in the special and the behind the scenes see you start from, like, this is my thought, and then you go in the coffee shop and you're like, you know,
here it is. Yeah, exactly. But then it was cool. You know what my favorite part of the process captured as well is us reviewing the set as well. So it's like seeing the jokes, like hearing about the start of the idea, like how this idea came to be, showing it on stage, and then showing the reflection, because that's something more comedians need to do is actually record their sets and like review what happened and how they can make it better next time. So I didn't even, because as you watch the vlogumentary, hashtag vlogumentary, you start to see the premise of the joke evolve as well. So I'm like, this joke is about A, and then as I do it more and more, I'm like, no, it's actually about B, and this is the funniest part of it.
Yeah.
So crying wasn't even the initial idea, but that became the core of the joke, is me having to build to this moment where I cry.
It was after the Irish place, wasn't it, that we were like, you need to cry.
And you, and you were like, you just need to go there. Yeah. You're like, you just need to cry. And I was like, as soon as you said it, I was like, that is exactly it.
Yeah.
I do need to like cry, but I need to build up this anticipation to me crying so that I can misdirect it.
Right, right. Because like then, I think that you got multiple laughs off of people weren't really sure, and this is like a good thing, weren't really sure what to laugh at. Like, were you crying because you were relieved? Mm-hmm. Were you crying? So they're kind of like, ha, 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 ha. Mm-hmm. And then like, as it goes further, they get further into the laughter and they're like, oh, this is funny. And like, this is like, because I mean, I was just in a wedding last weekend. It was my best friend from high school got married. And it was, there's so many comedic moments in a wedding, and like I don't know how many other than your own that you've been in, but like there's, I mean, all the way from the I don't know if you can say this word anymore, but the wedding Nazi.
Wedding Nazi.
You've never heard that term?
I mean, I'm white, but I'm not that white. I don't know.
It's a term of endearment almost. Really, it's the person that comes in there and is like holding their hand out and being like, no gum, and being like, you know, you can't, we had to cross our hands certain ways. And I was, this was in a Catholic church, and I was not raised Catholic, and so I did not know any of the, you know, I didn't know any of the motions I was supposed to be doing. So I was trying to just watch people and just, you know,
I've never been to a wedding that had Nazis in it, but
no. Well, anyways, they try to keep people on track so they don't get off subject.
Yeah, every wedding's different. That's why I thought mine would be funny to talk about, just because it was on April Fool's Day.
Because that's a real thing, right?
Yeah, all of it's true.
Yeah, all of that is true. Like that all really happened.
Yeah. And it was fun to even like up till the night before the special, I like found a new tag for it. So it was just the evolution. Every single show, you just gotta continue to edit and adjust, and I'm hoping it shows comics just the amount of work that goes into like creating a joke.
Right.
And I'm not under the illusion that if I gave myself more time the joke wouldn't get better, but I think in 3 weeks I made it sufficiently good, and it killed, and it actually ends in an applause break. So
I
think I succeeded in getting it done. But it's starts off as, hey, here's me rambling for 7 minutes, and then it ends up being,
well, and then like it's at the very beginning, at the start, of your of the special or of the behind the scenes, there's the part that you're talking about the fact that you're going into like a storyteller, and like I saw that evolution in the short time that I spent with you.
Yeah,
of like you have. It's one of those things. I mean, you address it in a lot of your stand-up is you have to address the fact that you're in Atlanta doing comedy and you look like the default white guy.
Right.
Like, that's the first thing that we pointed out when you and I were first hanging out is like, wow.
I'm a white avatar.
Like, yeah, Tony Hawk, like you're the blank.
Right.
Like, I'm the one that I've been trying to dress myself like my Tony Hawk pro skater ever since I was a kid.
I'm just the mannequin.
You're the starting point.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you're in these rooms that you kind of have to earn their respect.
Mm-hmm.
So you have those jokes that work in those rooms,
mm-hmm.
and you address it in the special. You talk about the fact that like you started out in the rooms that people sat back and said, all right, let's see what this white boy got to say.
Strip clubs and all that. Yeah, dude.
And rough. So like you see that material, and then like you earn that trust, and then in what I got out of this whole special is that the experiences, white, black, Mexican, different color, different heritage, whatever, the experience is very similar. And you can laugh at the same experiences because although they're a little bit different, they're very much the same in the fact that, like, the point, like I said earlier, like the point where you got to crying.
Right.
Everybody cries at a wedding for some reason or another. So the funny part is like, what part are they crying about?
Right, yeah.
And so, like, I think that that's where it kind of connects on a whole thing. And I might be going way too deep.
No, that
like,
makes sense.
That's kind of like, but as I edited, that's kind of what I pulled from it and what I got from it. And, you know, those are the things that you learn and you see in filmmaking of, you know, this is why you end up with three different edits. Because, like, you'll get something from it, and you'll get this different angle, and it kind of, the edit is what builds the story. Really.
For sure, yeah.
And so, like, for the people that you're talking about that are the you know, comedians or the filmmakers or the people that are wanting to make something like this, make it all the way to the edit. Keep shooting. Just keep it rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you think it's going to trash, like, even if you think things aren't going the way that you planned it or you're not... you know, a lot of the work that I've been doing lately revolves around the fight world. The guys that you may be filming or yourself even may not win. So, like, what's the spin there? Where's the story? Where's the... Because there's further things that can go, and I think that I learned a lot of that on what we were doing of if you just keep it rolling, it'll form a story itself, especially if you're doing.
Yeah, and I started with an idea for the special in terms of, like, I wanted to call it the Trophy Husband, but this evolved over... me reflecting on, like, and I think it's important for comics to, like, what are you trying to convey with this? What story are you telling with your special? You know, so I knew I had a bunch of different material, but it's like, how does this form into a story? And on the surface, it may not seem like it does, but as you start to organize it and you start to put, oh, let me open up with this joke. Oh, never mind, that joke should go third, and the third joke should go eighth, and the eighth joke should go first. As soon as you start to piece it together as a complete set,
yeah,
then you start to see the story and maybe the theme of your special.
So what makes it a set as far as... That was something that was curious to me, is like, what makes you decide that order? Is it rhythm, or is it... a combination of kind of... Does that make sense?
Yeah, for me, it was almost just like... Mine was more chronological to a certain degree, where it was...
Because it was a story.
Yeah,
it had like to happen story. in order.
Yeah, a lot of it is like, here's where I'm from, here's where I went to college, here's how I met my wife and how we got married, and then here's the jobs I've had along the way to get to become where I am.
That's a good portion.
And the things I've gone through in comedy to it ends on a joke my wife told me not to do.
Right.
But what really sparked kind of my interest in, like, okay, what is the story of this, is when I interviewed Mikey Winfield, who he had released a special on Amazon, but he had independently released like two others. And his specials are like... It was funny, his fans notice his specials are like different chapters of his life. So like one special almost leads into the next. So I was like, that would be a cool way to do a special.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was noticing when we were working together. And we've
So I put and I think that's important because there are so many specials is to if it's a comedian wanting to do a special, it's like, okay, how am I gonna make mine unique? And a good way to do that is to like tell your own story or do it in a different way. So I wanted to make sure I didn't just throw out a special. I threw out an experience for people and it has a unique captivating kind of story behind it as opposed to here's a sequence of a lot of funny jokes.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the sequence of a lot of funny jokes is wrong, but putting that extra thought, I think putting the extra thought into it is how comedians trying to do it themselves are going to stand out from all the static of other specials is if they put in that extra thought of like, how can I make this unique? And it hasn't been done before.
Well, and I think that like there's the, I mean, of course, there's like the Dangerfields that, you know, can come out and bah, bah, bah.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like, there's that type of jokes. But then, like, I was always more attracted to when I really started to get into comedy. I mean, my all-time favorite is Hicks. Like, so, like, I really got into comedy, like, with Carlin and Hicks and, like, deeper than just the jokes.
Right.
And that's where I see kind of you as a comedian evolving. Like I was saying earlier, you have the quick whip-ems to respond to your appearance because you got put through those fires of going through the tough rooms and the tough, hard crowds that you can, you have your quicks, but now you're kind of evolving to be able to tell a story in a way that it all kind of interconnects. And that's what I mean is like, if you go back and watch Hicks work, like there's an incredible documentary out there about his, that his family did, like the foundation that his family started, that like talks about all of his work leading up to his death.
Oh, whoa.
And it's on Amazon Prime.
Cool.
I can't remember what it's called, but it's, I mean, if you just type in Bill Hicks, you'll find some of it, but like, and all of his specials are on there now too. So like, I'm a huge Hicks fan.
Of course. No, there's Bill Hicks is one of the best. Yeah.
And so like, but like his speech about, you know, life being a ride is one thing that like, I really kind of, a lot of my projects kind of hinge on that of the concept of it's a ride. And, you know, like some of the stuff on my podcast is some of the voiceovers that are in the music of my podcast is him giving that speech.
Oh, okay.
And so like,
sounds like a copyright issue to me.
Yeah, but, you know, well, it's the words spoken.
Plead the fifth. Oh, okay.
Of the, that speech. And it, that concept of the ride being a tire for all of his work has been interesting to me all along. And so like seeing your stuff as you're like becoming a storyteller is really fascinating. If you could have like, you know, been on a fly on the wall for that instance. So like, I think that this is one of those moments where like, as you continue to build your works, this is going to tell a story that like you couldn't really capture afterwards.
I agree. That's why I wanted to do it this moment, 10 years in. It's kind of like, this is like a benchmark, kind of planting the flag on my 10 year mark and then moving forward, which I think a comedian of any level, even if your goal, like I wanted to inspire comics, I mean, film their own special or just to take action in whatever they've been delaying. So it may be recording an album. It may be doing that road gig that you haven't been proactive about finding. It's just like inspiring comics to take action and whatever that means to them at this point in their career. For me, 10 years in, it was, okay, I want to become known as a great comedian. What do they have? Great comedians have a comedy album, and then boom, we meet, and you're like, no, we're doing a comedy special. It's kind of like how my...
But it's a comedy special album. You'll be able to consume it.
Vlogumentary. Yeah.
This is a historic moment in comedy history for the culture.
Boom. We out here. So comics, feel free to reach out to us with any questions as well. Did you have any questions?
Before I read,
some people post it on Facebook.
I think I've posed most of my questions for you.
Nice.
Well,
I mean, if anything pops up. But we had some comics posting
on some different Facebook
groups. Because, I mean, you know, I'm all about helping comics. So any
What's
questions
the buzz
y'all
out
have?
There for you?
The buzz?
Like, for the comics, like, what are they talking about with your special now that, like, what's the reaction you're getting?
I mean, people are really, people love the trailer.
Yeah.
People really dig the trailer. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
People are really digging the trailer because it's, like, it's just another thing we had was just, like, all this extra B-roll that wasn't just a comic walking out onto stage and killing for an hour. It's kind of like we're backstage a little bit. My wife and dog are there, you know, and then like the host, Tyler, who we started with way back. I started way back in the day. My wife was actually like, are you sure you want him to open for you? She's like, because she thinks he's funnier than me. But he's all wild and out now. But just like everything that happened with him at the beginning, like when, yeah, there's a lot of funny moments we were able to capture and infuse into the special that made it more, almost more like a movie than just a straight up comedy special. Like, I really think people are starting to play with the format of the comedy special.
Yeah.
And the idea, this is a fun note that just popped in my head. And when I talk about like comics just start, just have an idea and let it evolve organically as opposed to needing all the answers up front. I remember my idea initially was to, I always wanted it to have a bunch of B-roll and storytelling and documentary style, but the idea initially was to like film, like show some of the special and then cut into some like footage of me with my wife or something, or me talking about how that joke came to be and kind of going in and out of the special.
Yeah.
And then Judd Apatow and Gary Goldman released this special
that
goes in and out of the special. And I was like, oh, we're on the right track. We're thinking in the same plane as someone like Gary Goldman and Judd Apatow. But as soon as I saw it, I was like, that's not it anymore.
Because
if I see something, I'm at a point now, if I see something, it's too late. Like, if I see it happen, I'm like, it's too late. I don't want to try to replicate it. But it was, I've had moments like that where I've had a joke that then I heard on Daily Show or something. And I'm like, oh, cool, I don't do that joke anymore, but it's cool, I'm thinking. So the same thing with the special, it evolved from like this documentary going in out of a special to now it has just this behind the scenes stuff woven at the beginning and end, but then there's this vlogumentary around it. So it evolved, but I couldn't be happier with it, really.
Where do you think jokes come from? Like, when you come up with a joke, is it something that you think was already there in your head? Or is it like some sort of thing out there? I think Bob Dylan once said that like when he was writing songs, like he was tuned into something, that he was catching something. And then when he would hear a song replayed, he'd be like, that's not me. That was somebody else who wrote that song. I'm pretty sure that's Bob Dylan. I may be completely murdering that. That may not be what he said. I may be making that up completely.
I don't know, but I do like how you asked a profound question and then completely just dejected it before I could even like give it its proper due
but,
credibility. As soon as you're like, I'm like, that's a good question,
but
then you're like, but that's dumb and I shouldn't have even said anything.
No, but I'm just making sure that if somebody's sitting there just like pounding away on Google going, wait a minute, never said that, I'll be like, I may have just made that up, but that is my question. Like, is there something that you're tuned into that makes you find that joke?
Well, I think it's called a sense of humor for a reason. I mean, I look at humor as like the sixth sense, you know, and I feel like comedians just are more aware, more tuned into it. Just like some people see better than others or some people hear better. I think comedians tap into their sense of humor better.
So you're either born with it or you ain't. Either you funny or you ain't, is what you're saying.
No, I mean, I think comedy is to a degree like anyone can learn to play a guitar because there's technique and form behind comedy at its core.
Okay.
Anyone can learn to play guitar to a certain degree, but not everyone's going to be Bob Dylan, you know?
Right.
So I think
you're not going to be Hendrix. Like now Hendrix was just Hendrix and then he was handed a guitar and then,
I think there's there's tips and techniques and formulas people can use to like structurally be funny, but there's only one Dave Chappelle.
Right.
You know, we're all playing the same game, but you know,
what do you think? What do you think that is, though? What is it? What is it that they have there?
It's just,
if you knew, you'd be Dave
born.
Chappelle.
I mean, it's just born. I mean, I still got time.
Yeah.
What Chappelle show when he was 22? Yeah, I still got time to be 22 with a TV
show. Yeah, but so
show.
Like Chappelle's one of those that you hear stories about that like he was funny, regardless of what was going on around him. Like, yeah, he was that guy that, like, he was funny on the street. I mean, I don't know if you've heard the stories where, like, he would just, you know, hold an audience in Central Park back before he was discovered, just as, like, a 17-year-old kid, just being funny.
Yeah. I think people, I mean, some people can kick a football far. Some people can punch really hard. Some people are just really funny.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it's just, we all are born with different abilities, and some people are just born with that ability to be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're a what is it, nature nurture? So nature kind of person when it comes to comedy, that you're born with it?
I think you're born to be great at it.
I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody, yeah. But I mean, you know, you've been a fan of comedy your whole life, and you did that. Yeah. You did a set.
Oh, I did a set. I did a set, and I'm going to do more, but it is very different. Like, you get up there and you go, you forget basic functions, and like, it's funny because, like, in fighting.
Yeah, you're a fighter.
Yeah, you're an MMA fighter.
And you've been in cages with people fighting, and then basically stand naked. Up, you're like, you forget functions.
But the same thing happens in fights. Like, you'll hear guys in corners that are yelling to their fighter. Like, I used to train with a guy that the biggest thing we used to have to yell to him is, breathe.
Yeah.
Remember to breathe. And, like, you'll forget the most basic because you're in fight or flight. And you forget how terrifying, like, how that's some people's, like, worst fear.
Right.
Is getting up and, like, all the attention being on them. And, like, you forget how bad that is till you try to do it. And, like I said, I went up there and I had the thought that, like, because I write all the time. And, like, being a fan of comedy, like, I've always, like, toyed in the joke writing, you know. And I'll tell jokes to my wife and I'll hear, boo, you know.
Right.
And that's how I know it's funny. If she boos it really hard, I'm like, yeah, that one's funny. But, so, like, I had, like, my little set written out, and I went up and hit that first wall of silence, and it hurt. And then, like, I look down, and I go, okay, go back to the jokes. I go back to the jokes and then forget how to read. So I'm, like, skipping every other word. And then, like, I make eye contact with one guy. And, like, the one guy I made eye contact with, I could tell that he was sitting there just being like, it's cool, homie, but this is a burning plane. This is a burning plane. So I ramble off another 5 minutes, and then I'm like, I'm done. Bye. Thank you. Yep. First time. Bye. So I'm going to do it again. But, yeah, like, there's mad respect for the people that are able to do that. And to go up and just tell a story like that is hard.
Yeah, it is hard. Yeah.
For it to make sense and for it to, I mean, even in, like, this conversation here, there's been a couple times where I've, like, gone off on a wormhole and had to, like, find myself and bring myself back.
And to reel it in.
But.
If it was easy, everyone would do it. Because everyone.
That's true.
At some degree, everyone thinks they're funny, or everyone at some point has been like, you're funny, you should be a comedian or something. They're like, I should be. But then when you actually get up there, you're like, oh,
I'm not funny.
This is different.
Or there's a point, did it make it in the beginning? I know there's a point where you said this and you were sitting in a group, it was you and one of the openers when you were in South Carolina, right? Was that a place we were
in
at?
Greenville?
In Greenville.
Greenville,
yes.
North Carolina. Yeah.
North Carolina? Is that where we were?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or South Carolina. Is that a comedy zone in Greenville? Greenville. Was it South Carolina?
I think it was South Carolina.
Okay.
If it was North Carolina, I would have tried to get up with my cousins that live there.
Well, then we were in South Carolina.
Yeah, we were in South Carolina.
Okay.
It's all a blur. But y'all were sitting there talking, and you were talking about the fact that, like, there's one thing to do it in a place like that that's, like, nice. There's people there. They're laughing. They're fun. It's another thing to go tell jokes to three drunks that didn't know they were going to be there and didn't know comedy was happening on a Tuesday night.
Yep.
Like, that's an entirely – and I hadn't seen that contrast yet until the time I spent with you, and that was pretty interesting to, like, sit in the room full of comics that you hear the bah in the back, and that's the only person laughing.
Right.
Everyone else is like, move on.
That's why I'm excited that we were able to capture all those different comedy environments. Like,
yes.
The open mics, or even just like the rough open mics versus an open mic with a good audience versus like comedy clubs, just to show what comedians go through. I'm really hoping it creates a whole appreciation just for what we as comedians go through, because a lot of people don't know.
And I'm not going to sacrifice him on your podcast, but I did, while you were on the road, get to see someone, like, truly die a death. I had never seen someone die a million deaths.
He twice.
Twice. and went back with the exact same material that bombed the first time. So like I felt not bad for him after the second time because I was like, bro, you didn't pay attention, did you?
And this was like a big room. Yeah. Like it was a big room, not an open mic.
So like that was fascinating to watch that happen. And then like it was also fascinating to watch the like it fall on your head where then like you had to save that part of the show.
Yeah.
And have to deal with it to lead into somebody who killed later. Mm-hmm. So like you had to set that guy up or else that would have been a rough ride for everybody for another 2 hours.
Yep.
Like if it had gone right back and you just kept ramming in the same like
Yeah, and that's the thing with cuz I was actually featuring that weekend and the guy who bombed was doing a guest spot. So it's usually like the host tees it up, the feature just rides that wave and then the headliner just closes at home.
Right.
But the host set it up, the guest spot came and just crashed it all down.
It was bad.
And then it was kind of like, yeah, going up there and just having to kind of reset the room.
But that was kind of fun. Like I said, honestly, on that episode, I've thought about leaving some of that in. Like I said, I'm not trying to like crucify the guy because I'm sure that he had enough on that ride. But like, I to watch that play out and to know like, and I hope that guy like continues on and like he like learns and bounces back.
Oh, yeah.
But like, that's what I've always said in my filmmaking, like what really influenced me to go into a direction of a filmmaker was to the skateboarding and watching people fail over and over. That's what made it cool. And so part of what makes this documentary style to me that I personally enjoyed was seeing the failure, seeing how hard it is, because like you said, if it was easy, everybody'd do it.
Yeah, I agree. And that is important, yeah, to keep that in mind that when people bomb, I mean, no one's immune to bombing, and I don't make fun of other comedians. Like, if I respect anyone that gets up there,
yeah.
And you never know who is going to be who when people have bombed for 15 years and then all of a sudden figured it out.
And they just swing and then, it connects.
Now they're like, I figured out how to be funny, and here I am now as one of the funniest people.
And finding your voice, I'm sure, is one of the most difficult parts.
Oh, I've interviewed people 20 years into the game who are like, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm doing. Yeah. You know, so
and if you're good at it, you're recreating that all the time too.
Exactly.
Like I think that's kind of the draw that I hear from guys like you of like, you know, part of that draw is being able to recreate yourself over and over and over and over.
Exactly. Yeah. And just evolve and grow. So that's why I'm excited to get this special to be out. So it's kind of like the next chapter of my life.
Oh,
and
you have
career.
A special. The special's coming out. When is it coming out?
The special was released February 1st. My 10-year comedy anniversary. You can get it at joelbyerscomedy.com. Releasing it all independently, produced it all myself to inspire other comics to invest in themselves. And it's 10 years of work distilled into a 45-minute comedy special. And you can go on the Joel Byers YouTube to watch the vlogumentary that traces all of what we talked about through that, all the trial and error of a joke to get it ready for a comedy special.
Cool. What were some of the questions that you had?
Go get it. If you like this show and you've been meaning to support it, this is the best way you can support it. Go get that special. Or if you can't afford it, share it with other people. If you can't afford $10, I mean, that's like two coffees. So I don't know what you're doing with your life that you can't support a kid put 10 years of his life into this special. But
one coffee if you're in the right place in Atlanta.
That's a good point. Yeah. Sometimes one coffee. So
get some of that little CBD in there and they'll throw you $12.
Support your special. Support your local comedian. In this case, it's Joel Byers. So here we go. These are from the Hot Breath Comedy Network group. So there is a there's like a secret Facebook group. If you go on Facebook and search Hot Breath Comedy Network, then you can see that we are all in here. Listener, sorry, we're recording this in my car, and a car literally almost just like backed right into the car as we're filming.
Oh, we're not done yet. He's all right. He's
okay.
17-point turn.
But there's a great secret Facebook group called Hot Breath Comedy Network that you can ask to join that one, and you'll connect with listeners from around the world. And it's really been cool just to spark up conversations about comedy in there. Okay, Hot Brethren and Sisterin, we'll see you back here next Monday to answer all of your questions you have about the comedy special. Go join that Hot Breath Facebook group. Go pick up the special. It's all linked in the show notes. Reach out with any questions you have for me or for Isaac. We're here to help. We want to help. this is a podcast I wish existed when I started comedy. So anything I can do to help comedians just get better faster, let's do it. So I'm an open book. Reach out, connect, and I'll see you next Monday. I end all these, of course, by thanking my wife for making the theme song for this podcast. And she also made the theme song for the comedy special as well. So go in the show notes, at least check out the trailer, at least go on the YouTube page and check out that vlogumentary tracking the progress of the comedy special. There are several more episodes to roll out with that, but there's still a few up there for you to enjoy and get your beak wet, if you will. I've never said get your beak wet before, but I'll see you next Monday, Hop Brother and Sister, and share this with comics, and I'll see you next week, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.